Dinosaurs are distant relatives of birds, and the Velociraptor is one of the most bird-like dinosaurs we've discovered. They weren't much bigger than a turkey, couldn't fly, but they did have feathers. Of course, none of the raptors we encounter today are as large or as ferocious, but they are an impressive lot. We're talking about the birds of prey that call Wisconsin home on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Are you a birder? What have you noticed about birds of prey here in Wisconsin? Have you ever had an interaction, and how did it go? 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Anna Pigeon is our guide. She's an associate professor of forest and wildlife ecology at UW-Madison. Anna, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much, Kate. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, we were so excited to learn about your last name when we were booking you. It couldn't be more perfect. But don't falcons eat pigeons for lunch?
Oh, they sure do. And when I was an undergraduate in Minnesota and helping to reintroduce peregrine falcons, the press really had a field day with my last name.
When did you get interested in birds?
Oh, I think I've always been interested in birds and wildlife. I was lucky to grow up near a natural area near the Minnesota River and was starstruck by all the wildlife species I saw. And then I had a chance to graduate work on birds, and I was very much hooked both by that and my undergraduate ornithology class.
Well, let's get started with some definitions here. What is a raptor or a bird of prey? What makes it a raptor?
The term raptorial means predatory. So raptors are birds that prey on vertebrates. Many birds eat invertebrates, insects and spiders, etc. But we separate those that eat vertebrates, so mammals and birds and snakes reptiles is what I'm trying to say.
How many different species of raptor are there?
Worldwide, I guess I'm not sure. Hundreds, certainly hundreds. In Wisconsin, we have 12 diurnal or day hunting birds of prey, and depending on how you count things, 7 regular or maybe up to 9 birds of prey that hunt at night, and those would be owls.
And so the day hunters, what are they looking for? What's their eye on?
Well, they distribute their hunting according to all of the availability of prey within Wisconsin. So some birds specialize on small mammals. Some birds specialize on eating smaller birds. And some, like the red-shouldered hawk, when the opportunity presents, eat frogs and snakes.
So basically what's ever tasty and available to them that they can seize on?
Whatever is tasty and available, but also whatever they have the specialized tools in terms of their hunting style and their equipment, their feet, and their beak and their ability to maneuver through the air. They're specialized to prey on different groups of prey. So, for example, a peregrine falcon is a highly aerial, mobile, accomplished flyer, and it can swoop down on its prey and hit them while they're flying in the air. That's something that other birds of prey can't do, other raptors can't do.
What about their claws? Are they unique?
Well, all birds have feet that have claws of some sort, but raptors are developed to a high degree. But even there, some raptors have more powerful talons than others. For example, the northern harrier is a species that flies low over grasslands and marshlands, and it's looking for and listening for mostly small mammals, mice and voles. It has fairly weak feet, so it's limited to catching fairly small prey. Whereas, let's go to the opposite end, the bald eagle has huge, strong, very powerful talons, and it can grasp big, wet and struggling fish, slimy and struggling fish with those talons.
We're talking with Anna Pidgeon. She's an associate professor of forest and wildlife ecology here at UW-Madison. Are you a birder? We want to hear about your most interesting bird of prey watching experience in Wisconsin. Where do you go? 800-642-1234. Have you seen raptors in your own backyard, perhaps as you walk trails with your dog? Where are they and what are they doing? What are you hearing? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Anna, these raptors, some have a pretty difficult start. It sounds as if not all of them survive.
That's true. It's very lucky for a raptor to make it to its first birthday. Greater than 50% don't make it to their first birthday. And that's for, there's challenges, many challenges along the way. So, for example, learning how to hunt successfully in three-dimensional space is a complicated feat, and raptors' brains are need to learn that very quickly, and coordination is important. But then many raptors will make a migratory trip in the winter to southern, a little bit more southern climes, and learning to know where are safe places and what kinds of areas to avoid is a difficult task and often a fatal one for birds just exploring. So, yeah, much less than 50% make it to their first birthday. Once they've made it to their first birthday, though, many raptors can live much longer once they become wise to the difficulties in their environment, and once they learn where food is available, they can live as long as some. So let's say bald eagles can live as long as 20, even 30 years.
We've have a bald eagle clip, and we've pulled some raptor clips, and let's listen just a little bit to a bald eagle. So, Anna, as we listen there, what are you hearing?
Well, I'm hearing what to many people is often an unexpected kind of, I don't know, how would you describe it, a weak trilling or chirping sound that the bald eagle vocalization represents. And people are often startled that this big, majestic, large raptor makes this kind of weak and, I don't know, chittery sound. And so what I'm hearing is birds communicate with each other through vocalizations, and so not sure exactly what that was about, but just vocalizing, being in, making contact with others that are in the vicinity.
And so a lot of these calls that we hear is making contact with birds in the vicinity.
Yes, raptors, several are particularly vocal, especially in the early part of the breeding season when they are establishing territories, when they're interacting and courting mates. Vocalizations seem to be an important part of courtship.
Talking with Anna Pidgeon, a UW-Madison Associate Professor of Forest and Wildlife Ecology, about raptors and their well-being and habitats here in Wisconsin. Have you ever seen a hawk or owl up close? What was that experience like? Have you had an interaction with a bird of prey? Share your experience at 800-642-1234. Your questions welcome as well. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll pick up the conversation in a minute on the Ideas Network. Raptors are the largest birds of prey in North America. Some birds of prey are migratory and others are year-round residents of Wisconsin or the Midwest. Depending on the season, bald eagles, ospreys, broad-winged hawks, and other birds of prey can be found perching or flying in our backyards, along our trails, and in other habitats. What is your experience spotting A Bird of Prey, where were you and what do you want to know about helping improve your backyard for raptors here in Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Anna Pigeon is our raptor guide. She is an associate professor of forest and wildlife ecology here at UW-Madison. Let's go right away to the phones now with Liz joining us from Viroqua. Hi, Liz.
Hi. I wanted to tell you, two summers ago, I noticed a very large form outside my front door. I have glass doors. And I looked out, and it was a young bald eagle standing 10 feet away next to my picnic table with its absolutely magnificent profile in full view. And I was amazed.
So what did you do?
Well, as soon as I opened the door, it crawled up the hill behind my house, and I thought, oh, it's got an injured talon. And then I called a wildlife rehabilitator that I know, and she said, yeah, I've been getting reports about that bird all morning.
Oh.
And she said, don't touch it. And I said, are you kidding? I saw that beak. And she told me that when young birds like that get injured talons, nine times out of ten, they do recover.
Well, Liz, thanks for that story. Anna, Liz saw it right there on her patio, right there in her own backyard.
That is pretty amazing to see a bald eagle sitting in your backyard or perched in your backyard. I hadn't heard such a thing. I was thinking as Liz was talking that perhaps the eagle had been, being a young eagle and young eagles having a harder time figuring out how to find food, that it had followed, I don't know what, some prey to the ground and was exploring looking for it, but I'm not quite sure what the story would be with the talon, injured talon, but I'm glad to hear there was high likelihood of recovery.
Anna, should people let birds of prey on their feeders, or how do feeders work, or is it even possible?
Well, so feeders attract birds that eat seeds or birds that eat suet, and those birds are often suitable prey for raptors. So especially two raptors, sharp-shinned hawk and Cooper's hawk, are raptors that hunt smaller birds. So sharp-shinned hawks will hunt sparrow-sized birds, and Cooper's hawks will hunt birds that are also sparrow-sized, but also up to robin or blue jay or mourning dove size. And so when those birds, like mourning doves, are attracted to the seeds that people put out and the raptors are looking or hunting, they also are attracted to the vicinity. And so you asked, should they? Well, in my opinion, it's awfully fascinating to be able to watch a bird of prey up close like one can if they're at their feeder. And nature has made it such that there are more birds that eat seeds than there are birds that eat birds. So it's designed for this process of hunting or of predation. So in my mind, it's a thrill to be able to see a raptor in action.
Let nature take its course.
Absolutely, yes.
Let's go to John now in Fitchburg. Good morning, John.
Yes, there were several that I can report, even just from in Middleton near the brewery, where there was quite an article in the newspaper that there were some great northern owls that were hanging around there. And you could get quite close, and there was quite a number of people that would stop along the road and see them. And my wife's sister out near Airport Road near Cross Plains, they had great northern owls that nested in some trees near their house, and they followed them and watched them close, and they were not afraid at all.
And, John, there's a hawk by you that is in your backyard, I understand, that you like to watch.
We see him come around, and he will swoop and sit in the highest spots in the trees and whatever and watch. And there was a fellow who was by screen porch in the back, and he was just sitting in a chair near the window, and he saw that that one swooped out and get a chipmunk right near the the window and was within 6 feet. He couldn't believe it how he did it so fast.
Front row viewing, John. Thanks so much.
I can hear the enthusiasm in John's voice. That's great. And what he was referring to about the great northern owl, there was a great gray owl, which is a boreal species. It's very rare in Wisconsin, that did create quite a stir several years back. I think it was about 5 years ago in the Middleton area.
John, thanks for the call. Let's go to Jordan now in Madison. Hi, Jordan.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing well. What about your raptor story?
So I lived on Spahnum Road, which is kind of near, it's basically on the border of Madison and Monona, and we had a large white pine.
Oh, you're fading out there, Jordan. So you had an owl with four baby owlets growing up in your backyard? Yeah, I think we've, Jordan dropped. Or Jordan, can you still hear us?
Yes.
You go ahead.
Okay, so I don't know where I left off, but so I had the mother owl and there was four small ones, and they were, I mean, they were active all the time. We could hear them talking. The mother was always calling out. And one time, there was four of them in the back. There were four small ones. And I went over to them. I thought the little one got hurt or something. And there was two on the low-hanging power line that were just clicking at me so loud. And as I got closer, the ones on the ground actually were flaring out their wings and clicking at me too. And it actually, after I finally got to the one that seemed stuck in the bush, because there was some that netting, that fencing, it actually had a rabbit. And so they were, I don't know what they were doing or why they were clicking at me. It's something I never really understood. And I'll get off 1 second. And the last story I have is I live in some prairie now, and just 2 weeks ago on my nest I have, we had a rabbit that lived with us for 2 years and a hawk just came swooping down right in the driveway and took it away from us. So.
Mm, wow. Jordan, thanks for the call. Anna, Jordan got really close to the owls.
I'm sorry about the loss of your rabbit, but it does highlight the point that raptors are becoming more comfortable living in the city, both probably due to the attractiveness of prey, because so many people feed birds, but also because of the lack of persecution. And so we're seeing red tails and owls, as he said, close in the city. And so regarding that set of owl young that he saw, so the clicking, I'm afraid, was a pretty strong alarm, stay away signal to him, maybe not so effective. Owls go through a phase in their life when they're out and exploring and walking around on the ground and using their bill and their talons to move up and through the branches. But it's a point when they can't fly yet. So mom or dad owl will bring them prey occasionally, and they're spending a lot of time begging. So very once you've heard it, you recognize a characteristic owl begging sound. And they will, at that time, they're very vulnerable to dogs and exploring people. If people think that they're, left alone, they're abandoned, they're not. They do have their parents out hunting for them, but it's just a phase of life that they go through when they can't quite fly.
Well, really quickly here, let's bring in Tom in Cedarburg. Tom, we just have a few seconds. What have you seen?
Well, I have a bird feeder in the backyard, a suet feeder, and I had some chickadees on the feeder, and I was sitting in a chair, and all of a sudden, a medium-sized hawk with like a dark blue top flew by me and grabbed one of the chickadees, and then it took off. And I mean, if I had to put up my hand, it would hit my fingers. Is how close it flew by me. I was amazed how bold it was. I'd also like to say that I'm a bird call, and I can get the owls, eagles, the big red-tail hawks, and the kestrels to a call to action me. But the medium-sized hunters, the bird hunters, they will not. They're always quiet.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for the call. Anna, Tom is also talking with those birds, calling those birds.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I imagine that they're responding to his vocalizations or his, I'm not quite sure how he's doing that. Early in the season, when they're early in the breeding season, when they're figuring out territories, working through relationships with challengers or neighbors, I wondered, would it be all right if I mention an opportunity to see raptors up close?
Yeah, very quickly here, just
sure.
A few seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah, the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology is offering a trip on January 26th to look at short-eared owls, snowy owls, and several that we didn't have a chance to talk about yet. And to get information about that, you could take a look at their website.
Very good. Anna Pidgeon is an associate professor of forest and wildlife ecology. It's been so much fun. She's here at UW-Madison. Coming up, we'll talk about bald eagles and their remarkable comeback in Wisconsin. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Birders are flocking. Yes, yes, they are, to Sauk City and Prairie du Sac today and tomorrow for the 31st Bird Eagle Watching Days. There are a number of Bald Eagle Watch events coming up on the calendar over the next few months, and we're talking about them on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Is there an Eagle Watch event that you love to go to? What is it about bald eagles that makes them so special in your eyes? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Join us with your story and your questions. Jeb Barzin is an ecologist at Private Lands Conservation, LLC. That's based in Spring Green. He's also a board member of the Fairy Bluff Eagle Council, and that's one of the groups hosting Bald Eagle Watching Days in Sauk Prairie area today and tomorrow. Jeb, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you, Kate. It's wonderful to be here. I have some great coffee with me, and I hope you and your listeners do as well.
Very good. Well, bald eagles have experienced quite a comeback here in Wisconsin, and last year was a record year for eagle numbers in the state, according to the DNR. So how big of a deal is this?
It's a real big deal. You know, it tells us that we can have an influence on the world around us if we choose to, and bald eagles are a great wildlife success story through which the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and have been very involved in. You know, they've been monitoring bald eagles nesting in the state for 45 years, and 45 years ago, in 1973, they estimated that there were 108 occupied nesting territories of eagles in the entire state of Wisconsin. But last year, last summer, they estimated 1,695 occupied eagle nesting territories. So that's a tremendous recovery. Yeah, it's just amazing. And those numbers continue to go up, and they don't really show any signs of leveling off yet. So we don't know just where that population can get to overall in the state.
What do we know about why the 1970s were so touch and go for eagles, getting on the endangered species list and really being very threatened?
Well, some of the reasons probably why they were threatened is the eagles were harassed, and they were also, they were shot as predators. But probably the most important thing was that they were their reproduction was very much hampered by organochlorines such as DDT that were in our environment and were really inhibiting their ability to lay good quality eggs. And so their reproduction was really curtailed, and that really caused the populations of eagles and other birds of prey that we call raptors to decline precipitously. Through laws, we banned DDT, and we got a lot smarter about the substances that we put out in our environment, and eagles were able to recover. But through other actions in the Endangered Species Act, we also were kind of a kinder and gentler nation to eagles as well, began to understand that they weren't just evil predators to shoot, that they were something to really appreciate.
Jeb, are we seeing similar comeback stories in other states as well?
Yes, eagles throughout the lower 48 states are rebounding throughout. In some states, the rebound isn't as quick or as large as it is in Wisconsin. And that's probably because in Wisconsin, we've been able to maintain what eagles would consider higher quality habitat than, say, you know, states further south that have more intensive agricultural systems and so on in place.
Talking with Jeb Barzin, he is an ecologist and a board member with the Fairy Bluff Eagle Council. That council very involved in bald eagle watching days in the Sauk Prairie area. You can join in with your questions, your story about eagles. Where do you like to go and watch them? 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Jeb, so with Bald Eagle Watching Days, that's an annual event taking place today and tomorrow in the Sauk Prairie area. Can you tell us a little bit about this event?
Yeah, it's a way of celebrating this wonderful recovery of eagles. It's a way of the community showing that it cares. The Sauk Prairie community, which is Prairie du Sac and Sauk City, really do a lot, working with the DNR and Fairy Bluff Eagle Council to really put this on, and not just put it on in terms of getting people to come, but they support it financially, they support it with volunteer activities. And, you know, what's really interesting and what I'm kind of proud of our community, because I live in that community as well, is that it's a community that has done a lot to share and really take conservation to heart. And so it's not just for Eagle Days that the community is involved with eagles, but it participates in helping to protect eagles. There's rules or that exist within each of the town boards that surround the Sauk Prairie area, and for the village of Sauk City and the village of Prairie du Sac, that actually have the protection and conservation of eagles in their town board rules. Businesses get involved, and they've helped us protect eagle habitat. We work with the community to close trails at times when eagles are concentrating, like during the winter, and so that we better protect areas that eagles like to feed and that sort of thing. So there's a real active engagement by the community, and I think Bald Eagle Watching Days is just an example of that, where we try to bring people to our community and say, hey, this is a great resource, and it's in our backyard, and we're proud to maintain it.
Let's bring in Matt now in the Lisbon area. Matt, what is your story?
Well, it was right around Christmas, and so for 3 days in a row, we noticed that there was a bald eagle sitting in our tree in our front yard. And so he sat there for about 3 days, or about half an hour, 3 days in a row. And we watched him, and then suddenly he would just kind of hop off and fly away. So it's nothing real exciting to tell you, but I just thought I would pass that along. I thought it was very unusual to see a bald eagle in my area.
And so close to your home and in right there in your yard.
Yeah, I mean, the trees, they're pretty good-sized trees. They're like maybe 60 feet tall, so they're good-sized trees. But, I mean, I live in a residential area, so there's homes all around, activity, cars, and, like I say, all kinds of activities. So I thought that was, you know, unusual, and so that's why I called.
Well, Jeb, what about eagles, seeing them in these very dense residential areas?
Well, eagles are long-lived birds, and they're actually fairly smart. And so they are very good at beginning to adjust to environments that we would consider in the past unfamiliar to them. And as the population grows, we see eagles becoming more and more habituated to some kinds of human activities. And so it wouldn't surprise me that an eagle showing up several days in a row at roughly the same time and in exactly the same place might suggest that there was some food that was nearby. You know, perhaps Matt had some agricultural fields that weren't in the residential area but were close enough by that a bird could sit in the tree, examine that field until it felt comfortable, and then go down and feed on a deer that had been hit by a car and made it out into the agricultural field and then died. And so they can, as long as they're not threatened or disturbed, they can habituate to fairly close proximities of people. And that's, you know, it's a part of that success story that if we give them a chance that we can share the same habitats a bit better. And you can often see that in the Sauk Prairie community. You know, some of the businesses have eagles that are perched on the river side of their businesses, but you can see them right outside the windows of those businesses if they're not harassed by people.
And our vehicles, our cars, actually make very good blinds, if you will, to view eagles.
Exactly right. A blind is a good way to describe it because eagles don't perceive people as being associated with vehicles. They just, I don't know what they see, but they probably just see this kind of big thing that moves around, and these big things don't tend to stop and threaten them, so they habituate to them. Whereas it's a little bit harder to habituate to a human being presence outside of a car. So when we're encouraging viewing for eagles, we encourage people to stay in their cars as much as possible because that lowers the disturbance that the birds face. And disturbance is a hard thing to measure with eagles because many people will get out of their car and they'll say, well, the eagle didn't fly away. And that's probably true that the eagle might not fly away immediately. But what the eagle will often do is stay there for a minute or two and then fly away, but importantly, not return to the perch after it did a foraging flight or something like that. Whereas if you stay in the car, the bird will continually come back, like Matt had described, you know, to that same perch. And so there is a disturbance that occurs, but it's a much more subtle thing that people aren't necessarily paying attention to when they believe that their presence outside of a blind like a car is not threatening.
We're talking with Jeb Barzin. He's an ecologist and a board member with the Fairy Bluff Eagle Council. He's giving us a preview of Bald Eagle Watching Days in Sauk City and Prairie du Sac that get underway today. And a shout out to Eagle Days along the Fox River planned for January 26th at various locations along the Fox River. There is also Bald Eagle Appreciation Days February 22nd and 23rd in Prairie du Chien. And let's round this out with Eagle Watching Day, March 2nd in Ferryville. What is your favorite place to view eagles? Tell us about it at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about bald eagles and their comeback in Wisconsin? How do you make your backyard a better habitat? Call in, tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll get back to the conversation, maybe hear from you on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The DNR has some important tips on observing bald eagles. Do not venture so close that you cause them to fly off. They need their energy to keep warm through the long winter nights. Stay in your car unless you're at a staffed viewing site. Your car makes a good blind and does not frighten eagles. Talking with ecologist Jeb Barzin. He stays with us as we talk about the Sauk Prairie area watch events getting underway today. He's a board member with the Fairy Bluff Eagle Council. Let's bring in Tommy now, joining us from Ashland. Hi, Tommy. What's your story?
Well, once this guy told me, I don't know who he was, but he worked at this place somewhere. I don't remember. It was kind of, well, it doesn't really matter. And anyway, he had shown me this picture of this bald eagle that had its wingspan about as big as a dirt road. Not the whole dirt road, like, road down. It was, like, from the side to the other side, that big.
Huge wingspan. Yeah.
It was like 15 feet big.
Have you seen a bald eagle in person, Tommy?
Yes, I have seen a few, but I might have seen a feather, but I couldn't tell if it was one or not. It was just on the beach with another feather, so it's hard to tell if it wasn't or not.
But you keep your eyes watching the skies and looking up in trees. What do you like about bald eagles?
Well, I do like dinosaurs, and Velociraptor has raptor in them, and they're meat eaters, so also things on, they also remind me of dinosaurs, so that's what I kind of like about them.
They're so cool. Tommy, thank you so much for calling in.
Bye.
Bye. Jeb, what about those raptors? They've got big wingspans. They remind us of our dinosaurs, those ancestors.
Well, birds are our closest living relative of the dinosaurs, so they very much are the new and improved dinosaur, and they've taken feathers to a whole new level compared to what we're on the dinosaurs, and they, you know, that's a primary adaptation that they have for being able to fly. And those big wings that Tommy is very well describing are what eagles use to soar so that they can fly without flapping their wings when they find updrafts, and that's a important characteristic that allows these birds to move really large distances and without too much trouble, without too much expenditure of energy, because they've learned how to harness energy that's coming from the earth and use it to fly on their own. It's really pretty spectacular. You know, we have young birds that can hatch from Arizona in June, or fledge, excuse me, from Arizona in June, and be found next to the Arctic Ocean in Nunavut in northern Canada 3 months later.
So if there's one thing we could do in our own lives to improve habitat, to improve quality of life for eagles, what would it be?
Well, in our own lives, I think it would be to certainly be respectful of the animals and really work to not harass them when you see them, because basically if you're moving animals from where they want to be, there's a cost to that. But I think it's also by, you know, realizing that as communities you can do things as a group to protect habitat, to try to find ways of addressing conflicts that occur when eagles and humans share the same habitat. You know, it's often difficult to do by yourself, but as a group, you can do quite a bit. So as I mentioned, our local communities actually have eagles as a part of many of the rules that they have regarding land use and or human activity. And that conscientious look at the resources that people value is a really important way of protecting habitat and can work for on a long-term basis.
And really quickly, as we wrap up here, we're going to be able to go to VFW Park in Prairie du Sac and actually see eagles up close.
Marge Gibson of Raptor Education Group is going to do an eagle release at 1 o'clock. And there are Birds of Prey shows at the River Arts Center, which is attached to our high school, both in the morning and in the afternoon. And they will have eagles that cannot be released, but they are used for education. So people have at least three different ways of seeing eagles up close and live, as well as, you know, we'll have eagles in the wild that are outside.
Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Jeb Barzin is an ecologist at Private Lands Conservation. He's also a board member of the Fairy Bluff Eagle Council, one of the groups hosting Bald Eagle Watching Days in the Sauk Prairie area today and tomorrow. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here is producer Steve Gotcher with a story about musician Joni Mitchell's time in Madison.
This story brings together a midwinter ice storm, the southeast shore of Lake Mendota in Madison, ice skating, and a series of photographs that became a record album cover. Dean Robbins takes us back in time to a cold February photo session on the bleak frozen lake.
I remember the 1970s as a time of journeys. College kids like me were forever on the road to discovery, whether hitchhiking or exploring our inner selves. That's why we idolized Joni Mitchell.
I'm traveling in some vehicle. Sitting in some cafe.
Like us, this eccentric singer-songwriter was on a quest. We followed her progress from the open-hearted folky of Chelsea Morning to the jaded romantic of Blue to the brash pop star of Help Me. In 1976, Mitchell's wanderlust brought her to Madison in a spontaneous photo shoot on Lake Mendota. Months later, the photographs appeared on an album jacket, encapsulating both Joni's career and the self-analytical post-hippie era she ruled over. Mitchell came to Madison for a February concert at the Dane County Coliseum in the midst of an ice storm. She'd just broken up with her longtime boyfriend and called off the rest of her troubled tour, so her emotional state was melancholy in the extreme. Gazing at frozen Lake Mendota from the Edgewater Hotel, she felt the call of the glassy white void. She could hear tree branches cracking under the weight of the ice, a sound reminiscent of tinkling glass. Mitchell went into town to buy a pair of skates, choosing men's black to match her mournfulness. She donned a long black skirt and a black ermine cape and leaped onto the ice. The surface was dangerously spongy. Freezing cold water splashed onto Joni's face, leaving welts. But she felt compelled to go through with her mad plan. Her photographer followed along to record the strange scene. Mitchell was surprised to find that her cape acted as a sort of sail. She spread her arms and let the wind carry her, looking like a crow in flight. The photographs captured a mystical moment, an artist on an unearthly journey, destination unknown and arrival uncertain. Joni liked the photos so much that she used them for black and white montages on her album Hegira. The title is an Arabic word meaning journey, and the wintry images fit perfectly with the musical message. Chilled by jazz rock guitar, the songs are less melodies than moods. They're less pop than poetry. In Coyote, Amelia, and other meandering masterpieces, Mitchell evokes the restlessness of the road, mirroring the restlessness of her soul. Jaco Pastorius' prodding bass seems like a stand-in for the psychic obsession she can't let go of. Rolling Stone picked Hegira's cover as one of the best ever. But for a Madison resident, it has special meaning. It shows us that frozen Lake Mendota is not just a place for casual recreational activities. It can also be something far more mysterious, an expanse of endless possibility.
You still have your music, and I've still got my eyes on the land and the sky. You sing for your friends and your family. I'll walk green pastures by and by.
Dean Robbins is a journalist and author based in Madison. He's won state and national awards for arts, features, and news stories, and has contributed to magazines and newspapers around the country. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television, in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Steve Gotcher.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent, here with us for Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.